Hey, Fred. Kind of interesting how close Jay Green's intermediate is to the King James, isn't it?
Very interesting. They're very close to start with, but the adopted Phoenician basically was with, you know, with the background in Aramaic, so it's close to Phoenician. And this died out eventually. The old Hebrew died out, except the only surviving what we have is the Samaritan later, now, official Aramaic, it's complicated. It's official because it's the official language of the Assyrian Empire, that's where it got the name official Aramaic. And it became commonplace after the 10 tribes came into captivity and brought others from the land. So official Aramaic is all throughout Babylon and Palestine. In Babylon, when Nebuchadnezzar took them into captivity, they spoke what all the books say, Chaldee, which is really Akkadian. Akkadian was the spoken, but the cuneiform writing is the using the alphabet that was later adopted. All the languages by this time are using alphabet. Okay. Up until the captivity, then we're talking about Old Hebrew and Aramaic, and official Aramaic. Then after the captivity, or in during, talking about in the captivity now, Nebuchadnezzar's language, Chaldean language, was Akkadian. But it's referred to as Chaldee, even in the Amorite Code. Really Akkadian, like the old Akkadian, with the alphabet added, instead of using the cuneiform, which is a correct still use two, but they use the alphabet. I mean, they use way back, way before the alphabet. The older and the alphabet.
So they spoke Akkadian and wrote with the alphabet.
They probably spoke Aramaic and Akkadian. No, it was like the country. Undoubtedly, probably most of the country probably used Aramaic, but Akkadian is the official language of the Chaldees. So, over a period of time, that became the national language. Of course, but you had both, and they're really close. It's almost like Spanish and Portuguese.
Where's the official Aramaic?
Official Aramaic comes back in the picture again. It was the language of Syria. All the Syrian kings and tribes coming to capture.
Oh, so that was.
It's a later. The only difference in official Aramaic and old Aramaic is just the development of the language. That's all. It's like the difference between old English and middle English. But it's called official because it makes the language. Okay, after the captivity, official Aramaic became the language of Persian Empire. Again, so now you have the Assyrians, which used the official Aramaic, and the Chaldeans used the Akkadian, and now the Persian and Cyrus using official Aramaic again. That goes down to this day. Syriac is really basically official. Now, when the Jews then came back from the captivity, the people in the land were still speaking official Aramaic. They didn't know what to go to travel. So they came back speaking Chaldee or Akkadian, but the people in the next generation grew up in that system. People that stayed in Palestine, including all the ones that were imported after the 10 tribes were dispersed, were still speaking official Aramaic. And the language problem is shown in Ezra, where he had to read the law to the people. He had to interpret. Daniel, parts of Daniel are in Chaldee, parts of Ezra are in Chaldee, which is when I say Chaldee, I'm going to say Chaldee. And Ezekiel was probably written in official Aramaic, but it could have been changed later, but it probably wasn't. Official Aramaic is biblical Hebrew.
No. Your estimate of Ezra.
Right. Ezra came back. The only difference in official Aramaic and biblical Hebrew is somewhere the square letters meet. Okay, now that is described as Ezra in the captivity that he brought it back with him. So the only difference, the pronunciation, the alphabet, everything is basically the same except it's shape of square letters, which is on that chart it shows. So then official Aramaic and biblical Hebrew are the same. The Aramaic was probably one of the first ones to have the alphabet because of the old Aramaic, the Ugarit. But just like in the New Testament, where Greek leaves its teeth, before the New Testament, the Semitic language, once the alphabet was imported, was right at the time of the convention. Okay, I just want to give you a little bit of the artistry for all of this, what it was on the last couple of days.
When the name of Christ was not Aramaic, did it
speak? It would have been official Aramaic, but by that time the language evolved further and got sloppier and sloppier with age, kind of like English did.
taste this man, but it just got the, plus it got the influence of the grief into a change and it's called late Aramaic, I think. I'm not sure about that. But there's four stages of Aramaic. There's a different stage in the time of Christ, but that's not what this is.
People came back from Babylon, they were speaking Akkadian.
Well, we don't really know now, but for sure, they probably weren't both. But the fact that they wrote, the difference came by the fact that Ezra had to interpret for the people. At least what the degree of difference was, stuff that was different, like the way they couldn't read it. So. He may have been reading the old Hebrew too. We don't really know, but whatever. That's why I think at that period where he was the one, and there wasn't anyone that had his prestige after that, that could have really worked on the scriptures the way they had it been worked on.
Yeah. Pretty much he decided that.
I think old Aramaic. I think that's when the canon was established, with the exception of later writings up to this point. And a lot of probably a lot of stuff was destroyed, superfluous, like that, actually delayed or destroyed a lot of
stuff. So just to make sure that I have this right, Moses wrote an old Hebrew,
probably,
which we actually don't have.
Except
what we have.
Except in the Samaritan country.
Oh.
But he could have written, in Egyptian hieroglyphics, he could have written Phoenician. Could have been written in Akkadian, but that was Akkadian did die out for somewhere around 1000 BC. So he could have written any of those four plus a few others in real early Greek. But he probably, I would think, he could have written the Chinese forefathers.
In other words, it had to be translated into Aramaic. However, in the translation, because they were so similar,
yeah,
it was just a matter of transliterating more than translating, just changing
some
of the letters.
On that chart that I gave you, you can see the similarities real close, except the only difference is the shape of some of the letters. And the pronunciation is a bit different, too. Quite a bit different.
But now, would the meaning of the words have changed, such as if we took Greek and translated into English, you know, just transliterated right across, we come up with words, you know, like you would know.
Yeah, but you're not doing it. It's like kind of going from Old English to English.
Okay.
It's not. It'd be different in spelling, like, you know, like here, H-A-E-L-E-N,
sure,
something like that, you know, that, something like that. And, but it's the same word, it would be a little bit different spelling. So you can't really tell to the degree what they did, except that's why I think that Lord Hudson has a canon, and also. But there's a lot that Ezra could have done just on his own energy that wouldn't have been inspired at all, and still be writing conformity, just like us, you know, just copy Old English and New English. You could make mistakes here and there, but you're not changing the word, except you may be changing the spelling. In that case, since the original spelling is the original spelling, you have to get into spelling is identical, and you can't do that. I can't do that because the Masoretic had letters later on, and there's no way we could possibly reconstruct what the original spelling says. We'll see. They added there's four letters that they put in random different places, and they wanted to emphasize because some of the consonants act as vowels as well, and they put those in. Particularly, it's why one of the reasons why they have so much trouble reconstructing how Yahweh was pronounced, because later some of the letters they had again. But the fact that it was, the square letters were in effect by Christ's day when he said he goes
the small set of the alphabet, and then the captives, you couldn't use that as a rule. So, but by that time, the common Aramaic that the people spoke had degenerated quite a bit. We're talking about,
I think,
400 years.
Would it be
that? Plus, with the influence of Greek, and all that.
Would a good example be like King James, or the word show is spelled S-A-E-W, whereas now we spell it as H-O-W.
Yeah.
However, there, the only difference being that their letters or resemble each other about that.
Yeah, well, like heal now, H-E-A-L, H-E-A-L-E. And instead of when they say healer, they use the part, they say healing, H-A-E-L-E-N-D, or E-N-D, or E-N-D-R, in all English. So you change the whole spelling of the word to get it the same identical meaning. It's not the same as what one language is. So regardless of what Moses wrote in, it was Ezra who put it in the form that we have.
Right.
Yes. But we have no, what about like Joshua and Judges?
Yeah, I think they could have been changed. Samuel, you know, I think they were wherever the, you know, the Lord had his people all the way down the line. And it could have been changed over before, but the reason I said Ezra is because he had a slightly different spelling in the Northern Kingdom, he had a slightly different spelling in the Southern Kingdom, plus he had Aramaic words, he had people that were speaking different languages, people speaking Chaldee, and there are so many different variables, somebody had to do something to bring it all into conformity the way it is, and into the square letters. Somewhere along the line, it got changed into the square letters. And if it wasn't Ezra in this group, then see, the scholars, they all take, that's what they believe is written down in the first place, the little scholars. So they believe it's in the oral that point. So, and based on the style and everything, that a lot of the different parts are written, but to me, all that shows is that's in the final form.
Plus, when you've got in various chapters, you know, you talk about Moses' death,
right,
and it looks back on the event. Someone else had to write that.
And Ezra, that's why I say Ezra did inspire Ezra to add in missing gaps in history, or places where the kings recorded things, places where, you know, the David Mark recorded, and he's going back in and filling in history, and that would explain why you've got to change the style here and things like that. And still, reconstruction of so, for example, a lot of the northern tribes in the Chronicles, in the places where if it wasn't inspired, I mean, if it was constructed like they say it was, why would anybody make exactly pieces of stuff? You know, that's an argument just for authenticity right there. Because you've got almost identical patterns. Somebody's just going to make up a history, they wouldn't bother to make all that. But the fact that the Chronicles is at the end of their Jewish canon, another reason why it would seem to me that in their eyes, you know, that was the lesser part of the Israel as a whole. So they may put their relegated inquisitor all on the end. But I mean, somewhere, you know, the Lord put a stamp on it where, you know, you can get in all kinds of discussion on the canon. But I think that's probably under Ezra's group, where, except for you that followed it, included that the canon was established not way down. Like liberals say, you know, it's the second century AD or something like that. I just want to get a little bit for Sargon, that whole period, you're pretty much back to the world history of Greece. Archaeological books. Hungary's Bible Dictionary is a good study for what the most of the find that he was discussing. He takes the Bible studies that he used to do. But his archaeology of the Old Testament is
The interpreter's Bible dictionary in the supplement, I say chapter 76, and his deed, which just got the revision, if you're doing one a year, it only goes from A to D.
For next year, I'll be the next one.
That's what they say. They only got the D on the first one. So,
what is
that right here?
For that one on it?
Yeah. But that would give you, if you could find something under that, you know, on the A to D, that would be the most recent word. So other than, if you don't have, that's the reason articles too, but it's not the quality of it. It's black, a lot of black, a lot of colors. They make up for it with a lot of pictures. The journal, the archaeological journal, you take the one that's got back to you. That's where your first comes out and you're going to discover it tonight. That'd be a project we could update the whole Genesis notes, last notes, in the nature of it. Material that we have is based on commentary once it's 100 years old. Plus, you know, like say, that stuff. A lot of the class notes that we ever have the manpower to do it would be brought up to date at the last 100 years. The journals then, and then the various Bible archaeological books. The other one is Piper's Biblical World. I'm going to grab that one. The second one is in there. That's an alphabetical listing. And you can find pretty much anything in there besides just being with words that you can change. And that's recent, it's pretty recent. The Dead Sea was 13, 12 books, Burroughs. And Finnegan's Life in the Ancient Past is good for some of the real recent stuff. It's good for the ancient civilization.
Pardon?
B-E-Y-E-R-L-I-N. And anything else you can get your hands on?
I don't want to speak as good as you just got Hastings. They've got stuff on.
Yeah, Hastings too.
Hastings.
promoted this stuff on a number of, for example, sacrifices. They'll go to Chinese sacrifice,
yeah, right.
Hebrew sacrifice, the Canaanite. Very soft.
Jewish encyclopedia, that's very good. But most of these are confusing. They're so dated. They probably kind of get current words. They almost set the, you know, they're set up on the top there with this information. Series on the ancient nations there. Pretty good.
The deal with
them. Yeah, sure. And then, of course, H.G. Wells.
H.G. Wells.
There's a, even Jack Herzog has a little, you know, you look around, it's hard to find. A lot of it's just been in the last 10 years, so much research. Kind of life, like I'm doing this. A lot of people caring about what well is involved in the space. Like her, they deserve, you know, they had a cult very similar to that. It's almost like being back when they had those statues. Now they're recurring movements, you know, where people told the same thing there. There was a monotheistic cult in Earth right around Abraham's time, and because they were hurting the sails, people mentioned new gods, which are all they started to send out of sin, and the Lord and the Lord and the Lord and the Lord and the Lord. And so they drove them out of town. That's about, a lot of them fled, a lot of them fled their land. Okay, let's get into the Masorah. I gave you two handouts. One is an assignment, the other is just, it's not how it's planned to go along. One idea, this idea, 53 on a test. And the other one, I have mainly to show you as I go along. Okay, then, 50.
You still have a story with
22
at 1. Chicken 15.
I think it's still a little bit of that. Everything about this, when you get into studying it, is the data. This gets right down to whether you interpret it that way or whether you interpret it that way. Put one in. I mean, the meaning of the word is so I take the meaning tradition. Another thing to take find like it in the text. So I just keep the tradition of the text. So probably I go back to it. It's divided into three parts. From the Torah, which are the comments around the first word of the Torah. And what did he curse? The margin of the Torah, which are the Torah column principally, and the Torah parva and the Torah magnum. Torah Parva is on the side, Torah Magna is used in the bottom. The third category is the Torah Finalis. And these are alphabetical lists. Of each book. drugs. So, essentially what we're dealing with is they're abbreviated to the small M for a PARVA, for a MAGMA, for a analysis, that we're going to be just dealing with these two. This is very small, and it does far only in German. So, when you throw a PARVA, was the only one of the three that was in the old figures of very good. The new one, which we're using, which are the photocopies that we have, is designated as Billy Brake at Third Cynthia, otherwise known as DHS. This has the Mathura Parva and the Mathura Magnum. Now, the Mathura Magna, they footnoted the four volume work that they don't have, so we're not dealing with that, except I just want to point that out and show you. So when that work comes out, that's principally to grab you the hand out there, I think, to want to benefit. See all these, you know, I just told you they use small and pretty easy to dig on. See what it says. Has a capital M and then a small M down at the bottom. MM. Not way at the bottom, but just up in the apparatus at the bottom. Everything inside of it. Then, okay, those are comments on page numbers in the four volume work. The numbers, right? Not good. It's like a strong number from good. So any of those that say MM, that's key to that four volume work. So that's the Mathura Magna. The Mathura Parva are the notations along the columns on the sides, on either side. If you've got the Genesis point, the one on the left is kind of empty, I think I cut off, but on the right it gives you a bunch of comments in Hebrew. And as you go along, take the upper right, and then you can go from right to left. Well, that was another reason why I was in such a position to go from right to left. All right. Okay, it has a little, if you take the top line, it has a little circle between the first and second word. Yeah, that little circle, all that little circle, that's the phrase of the comment. And then, if there's a number, like there, it says number 8, somebody finds it where we're at. Right at the end, there's several comments there. Whenever there's space in between the letters, there's a comment. There's several comments there. But at the end, it says number 8, okay? Now, you go down to verse 15, where we're just at, MM, mm-hmm. And it says, down to 8. We're at verse 15. Go down to verse 8, and it says MM 38. Everybody find that out. MM38 is on the left side. Right up from the bottom where the unit is up. You got which side? You got the Genesis one, not on the left. Okay. In the upper right hand corner where it says the verse number, which is 15, the first line, right to the right of that, there's a little 8. Okay, that 8. Go down to where your MM and Mathura Magna section goes down there. And you look for the number 8, all the way over to the left there, number 8, it's your first comment. There's the MM38 after. So that's Mathura Magna, Magna 38. 38 Magna.
So, that's all you need to know for this part of it, as far as the core magnitude. We don't have the core body work, but if it comes out, it'll be in English, and it gives you what their best scholarship is and what a lot of their verbiage is. As to what that particular comment on that verse is, maybe nothing more than it occurs so many times, but sometimes it gives you different manuscript readings in the past and no longer exist. I'm sure there's other manuscripts of authority for why that reading, or sometimes it will give you an alternate spelling, or it will tip you off to the same word as a synonym to other words. It keys you into the Jewish commentaries, where it basically says, and that's the main source, the Christian commentaries. All of them, Matthew, the first bunch of the old, where they went through this Torah and Jesus. And that's where they got a lot of the comments and ideas. The Christian primary source. That's all those little numbers mean, columns, when they refer you to that column there. And anytime you see a little circle above the word, that means there's a comment inside. And the comment inside, next to the number 8 there, that's a comment in addition to what it teaches you down here. Sometimes it'll just give you a comment and there won't be any number at all. Like, for example, if you go down to verse 22, which is 8 lines down, go past the middle of the page here, there's another little circle. Okay, you come over here, and then in the column, all you see is here. That means that construction occurs like that twice. That's all it tells you. It doesn't key you down to the number because there's no further comment on that verse. Anytime you see a letter with a dot over it, it's a number. So, usually, you can eliminate a lot of time. A lot of times you'll see it'll have, this is L. It'll have this. The end of L. That just means that's the only occurrence in that form of that word. And you'll see L a lot. Like over on the left column over there, if you go down the third time, it's with a L like that. And then the third line is the fifth one. And further down the page, there's another. So that's the most frequent one. But all the other letters you see, when you have a dot over the top of it, alphabet by Greek, the letters stand for numbers. So it just tells you how many times the number is moved along. Pardon? Moved along. Along it. That just tells you that's the only form that only place that occurs. Not that that's the only word. That's not place that word occurs, but that's the only form or the only place that the word occurs. Use it in the only form. Very few words on the third one. Yep, and enough. Okay.
Can you say form? Do you mean as it goes off?
No. Well, sometimes, yeah, the way they get pointed to power. Sometimes it means that the only word, period, in singular or plural form, which wouldn't have anything to do with the point. Or it could be the masculine or feminine genders. They don't have any. kind of go through this now. I'm just kind of break it up into sections. So I'll just tell you what I'm going to do in sections. That handout, this handout, I'll refer to it from time to time to keep it up. But I wanted to show you that circle between now and next week. I want you to just be able to find the M&M on the bottom of the fact that you see a circle. You refer to the column. And what Green does on his, well, not really, but he doesn't read the footnote. But whenever you say an asterisk over a word or in a space between a word, there's a comment at the bottom of the page. So they didn't print too well. Some places they're fairly legible, and other places they are. It doesn't give you the comments anyway, so it doesn't bother a whole lot, except it does let you know that there's a comment for that verb. It could be deteriorating, you know, for some reason, you know, could be important reading. But if it is, if you run along one like that and see an asterisk, you check Robert, and if it's important, then I would only tell him if I check it out. Under, I'll label these sections as I go along the Roman numerals. It is just section one. Just a review of information history. Probably the first effort of collation of manuscripts, for example, Samuel Kingman's Chronicle, was with Ezra. And this has probably been the first notation to the manuscript started, the first effort of preserving the text. The tradition traces it back to them, and there's no reason to doubt it. It's easy to pull it out, but now they've got manuscripts that have been corrected. They're abstracted marks, and they're useful to go back. So, very likely, you did, you know, they changed the pronunciation of the tetragrammaton, so not to pronounce the name. So, they obviously did some changes in it.
Okay.
Nice
question. But he had more than one.
Yeah. That means there's more than one comment.
Yeah. How do you sort them out anyway?
Well, at this point, I don't expect you to. And what it means, if there's more than one, let's see. Okay, let's take number 30. Let's take 29 above it. That's the biggest one. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 circles in that line. Okay, starting on the right-hand side, the first one says that it has a comment and it has the number 14. And then there's a period. There's a period after each one. So there's a period, and then there's, after that, there's 1, 2, 3 comments. I think there's a period between. Yeah. Normally there's a period between each comment for each circle. Now each circle may represent more than one comment. So when you put it more than one comment, there's a space between letters. So like there's, look at number 11 right here. Okay, there's two comments for the first circle. Okay, you've got three circles on that line. The first one, there's a mark like this. And then there's a mark like this. And there's a period. Okay, we've got two comments on that first circle. That period alerts you to the fact that the next comment is for the next circle. Okay, then there's only one comment, the llama, the L, low, means that then there's a period, and then there's two comments on the next one. The first one is the number of occurrence, and then there's a comment on. Anyway, there's three letters after that, but that's a common honor. Now, I'll show you, there's a comment, you can copy down, and in the back of the book, they're listed with the Latin equivalent next to it.
Okay.
And then they give you, for those of you people who don't know Latin, they give you a Latin equivalent in English. So that's what that little thing is in the front of the book, so it's alphabetically. Yeah.
In the front?
For the front. The BH. Yeah, right.
No, it comes out.
A little booklet.
Yeah, a little booklet.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's easy to do. They're all Latin inside with the English after. So then you find the Latin word, you go to this and start with the hard way to do it. You didn't have a Latin. That's in the Torah. This is in the Torah by now here, but it's all in German. So we're not worried about that. We're not that much, see, anyway. Okay. We'll get more into that as we get there. I just wanted to kind of run out of time to read that much. And throw our magnet, we won't be doing anything with it because we don't have the four volume work. I just wanted you to know what it means and what I was talking about. The parva now is what's in the column. So we've been looking at in the columns on one side. The magnum, VHS now. So the Kelly Church is used. It's on the bottom there. Okay, all right, under Roman numeral 2, which again is kind of what we do, square letters were introduced somewhere around this time, whether it's in Babylon or whether as it is, I think probably as it is, and him on the call is Sophon, right, although they weren't called that then, but that's the name of the Jews that we came from. The old letters only survived in the Sumerian alphabet, and they're called rats.
Still number two?
Yeah, still number two.
Okay.
Rats. Hey, the Lola. Or Sumerian alphabet. That's what the Jews refer to the old letters as. That's the old Hebrew.
That could be called the pretty good thing about it, right?
It got to be a big issue with the Jews because thing of pride because the Sumerians had the original alphabet and the Jews had different things originally. Yeah. And so it got to be a big issue and they tried to justify it back and forth. And there's just page after page of fanciful invention of how the word came down and what it is. And you know, he went through either that or they try and prove that it wasn't originally written that way, but all the best Jewish scholars, even going back to the early Zachabah, which is talking about the first century, he forbid the use of the old letters. He commanded that all the scribes be time on each square letter. But apparently, there's still some manuscripts in this time that were written in the old characters. Although we haven't found any, the Dead Sea Scrolls are all in the square letters. But he forbids writing in the old letters. Now, some of the scholars jump on that. Because you can change some of the old letters a little bit. And what I showed you yesterday on that chart, the 1, 2, and 3, where you can, you got this means one thing and this means another letter. And if you go back and if you
word spelling and substitute this and said that in Greece, it's a good thing. Well, he found about 30, students were getting it, found about 30 still places like that. So he thinks he brought it back and then he said the whole section of it. All of them are people's names and places. There's hardly any of them, the details, examples of details that are any important. But if the Septuagint and other versions and so on, they all line up against that very text, then we have to make a judgment on it. You know, that's essentially what it's here for, which is very, very rare. Very, very easier commentators. The Talmud also acknowledged that square letters came in. They're where the tradition came, that square letters originated with Ezra and Babel. Jerome said the same thing. There's a mission as well, which is earlier than the part of the Talmud, but that's what Agabus used. I think what he edited, so that's what the earlier mention of the old letters are as far as first to be. Okay, that's the third section now. It's on the division of consonants and the words. Now this gets in a little bit more hairy because the original the way it was originally written, even in the square letters, it's just like the Greek, they were capital letters, so there's no word division, it's just in a single line. And usually there's no question where one word ends and the other one takes up. But some of the manuscripts give readings where they differ from other, and this is another thing that's given in the Torah line, where some disagree on the division of some words. In some cases, the Septuagint will agree that the word division is different. Very, very rarely, but on occasion of this. And the Dead Sea Scrolls show that too. They show that that there wasn't any division at their time. So for the later time that the words were divided, they probably were divided by measure. We're at number four next time. These are also some of the difference between Ben Asher and Ben Affleck, is the division of about 10 years that they issued. Next week we're number four. So I think we can get to that next time. We'll be into section and a little more material.
Probably a little more useful. Okay, Brett, now that you talked to me, I believe that you also have been giving us a good form, right?
This way?
The prophet reads from Isaiah that deals with when they give us the cuneiform writing. It says, he brought me out of the miry clay.
What are we supposed to make that assignment?
I've got a good look on it. I probably will be on my main stage. And we did a fine time to work on it. That was the last one I found out for about two years. Based on later computation, actually, the Chaldee, they were the Chaldee.
terrible.
No. See, what happened is that basing came down.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah. Sure. Well, that, you know, the Magi or whatever. See, Daniel was in Rome. And he had a tremendous store of knowledge. You know, he had a conceivable, kind of occult knowledge that he must have had, as well as, you know, where he had to be so self-conscious of the Lord that he didn't get into the job. Well, I gotta go back.